The first part of the 19th century belonged to France. By 1811, France seemed to prevail from Spain to Poland. Only Great Britain seemed to stand in the way of the one man who seemed poised to claim all of Europe, Napoleon Bonaparte. Just 4 years later, Napoleon's empire was in ruins, and the emperor himself was in exile on the British island of St. Helena. The life of Napoleon is the story of a man with a vision who ruled with an iron fist, but also popular support. A man who still, nearly 200 years later, is loved, feared, and always continues to fascinate. Historian Stephen England has written a new biography of Napoleon. It's called Napoleon, A Political Life. And as we approach Napoleon's birthday on August 15th, Stephen England joins us in our studios in New York. Thanks very much for being with us.
Scott, it's great. It's a dream come true to be here.
Thank you. You begin your book by talking about the feeling that you had standing before the tomb of Napoleon, different than you get from standing in front of the tombs of other leaders or people we would fairly identify as dictators.
Well, what I said in the book is, and I feel when I go back, in this particular instance, it's not an empty geometric space that you often feel in memorials and tombs. You have a sense as you look down on the sarcophagus that the abyss looks back. It's a little disconcerting.
Napoleon said once, I believe, I love power as a musician loves his violin.
Well, of course, yeah, I mean, he did love power. Most leaders, many leaders, the best of them probably do. In our day, a head of state is much less likely to grant up front that he loves power. Napoleon was of an era where it was more acceptable, more politically correct to grant that he loved it. And he did use it. He did use it in unique ways, whether to create a form of authoritarian democracy that the world hadn't known theretofore, or to create an empire that integrated Europe in a way that had never been known theretofore, and is indeed the first instance, a modern instance, of the integration of Europe.
Let me get you to talk a bit about Napoleon as a military leader, because clearly he wouldn't have had political impact if he'd simply been a revolutionary.
Absolutely not. And again, that's something that's not likely to be stated loudly by scholars. If the man hadn't won battles, we wouldn't be sitting here talking. What's interesting about him as a strategist that I try to show in the book is that Napoleon is often considered to be a kind of a great chess player, of a strategist who planned these things far in advance, when the truth is much closer to being a poker player, to having a sense of what the opponent is doing in this minute, and then reacting faster than he can react, sensing what he's going to do faster than he senses what you're going to do. Now, that's a very different thing from planning grand strategy. Where we get that impression from Napoleon is that after he fought and won these battles, he would then himself, the propagandist, the writer, recount the battle as if it had been an act of grand strategy.
At the same time, how was it that he impelled men, and in those days...
That's the great challenge of a military leader, is not sitting in a study with a map, though there's that aspect. It's the ability, and this he had in spades, to mobilize and motivate human beings, men, to stand by him, as of course they did in victory, but even more amazingly, Scott, to stand by him in defeat. The great miracle of Napoleon as a leader was in the return from Elba in 1815, when he came back and led the French army and nation once again. It was very clear that this wasn't going to work. It was very clear that they would probably be defeated by the Allies. And yet they rallied. The Russian campaign, the soldiers stayed stuck by him during the retreat, his hold on his men, though it was in the face of sheer, sure death, was never severely shaken. Mm-hmm. That can only come from a kind of an inner psychological hold. That's not because they're with him to get something.
Well, was it in any way tied up with the idea that, you know, maybe is more easy to get hold of in France than it is in the U.S. today, that Napoleon was fighting for, I call it a revolution, call it a reformation, but he was fighting to undo a class structure, to universalize opportunities in a way that hadn't existed in Europe?
Well, certainly the French who rallied to his cause understood that for better and worse, Napoleon was salvaging, holding on to the French Revolution. Europe understood him as a revolutionary, outright revolutionary, a kind of a Robespierre on horseback. what he represented in the eyes of the territories that were conquered was the imposition of the new modernizing, democratizing, administrational aspects, secular, lay aspects of modernity. And there was a great deal of church and nobility and royalty that were opposed to this.
I was interested to read in here that unlike some other great military leaders, you say he was actually more interested in nation-building than battle-winning.
That's one of the things that's different in my book from most takes, particularly English-language takes on Napoleon. The British and the Americans tend to see him as a general, as a conqueror. The fact is, what interested Napoleon the most, by far, was the creation of states, and that makes him a political leader first and foremost.
You believe that there are some lessons that American readers can learn about empires, how they rise, how they persist, and how they fall.
Yeah. Empires rise and fall, and of course, ours, whether it's going to fall or not, we don't know yet. Napoleon would certainly be jealous of George Bush because the American president, any American president since the fall of the Soviet Union, holds a great deal more power than Napoleon did. And that would be an object of envy for him. I think in the modern world, Napoleon would feel himself fully American, not French. I don't think his devotion was primarily to France, it was to power. What he would say, I believe, to Americans today is that accept the mantle of power. Don't pussyfoot around it. Don't hide or pretend that you don't want power. Accept that you do want it. Napoleon would say, you have a chance to organize the world, go for it. It's going to be expensive in lives and in your own democracy, but you won't get this opportunity again.
Stephen, thank you very much.
Oh, Scott, thank you very much. This is great. I enjoyed it a lot.
Stephen England, author of Napoleon, A Political Life.